Hi, so I'm here to introduce today's speaker. Today's speaker is Arlene Pellicane, and I first met Arlene earlier this year when we were introduced by Kathy Lipp. I've been excited to introduce her to you ever since. She's provided expertise as a guest for the Today Show, Family Life Today, The 700 Club, The Better Show, The Hour of Power, Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah, and Homemade Simple on TLC, and numerous radio programs. Arlene is a speaker and author of 31 Days to Becoming a Happy Wife, 31 Days to a Happy Husband, and 31 Days to a Younger You. So look at all you can accomplish in 1 month. She's recently published Growing Up Social with Gary Chapman. Today we're privileged to hear her insight on raising relational kids in a screen-driven world. So please join me in welcoming Arlene.
Michelle, it's great to be with you. Yes, you can do a lot in 31 days, moms. And we are busy moms, so that's why we have to be able to do it in 31 days. And if we can show a few of the slides, I brought my family pictures so that you know I come as a fellow mom. So we have three kids. My husband James and I live in Chula Vista. Our oldest is Ethan. He's there in the middle. He's in fifth grade. He's the brainiac of the family. He loves Legos and reading about World War II, and he'll talk your ear off if you let him. Our next child is Noelle, and she's the giver. Oh, mom, they need that. Oh, let's give them this, you know, and she's going to fix it for you. And Lucy, her favorite word is huggy. As I've written this book with Dr. Gary Chapman, many of you are familiar with the five love languages and their how to give and receive love, and I highly recommend that to you, Gary Chapman and the five love languages. And hers is definitely touch, because she'll take my arm and she'll put it like this, and then she'll go like that. And she wants me to scratch her back. And I'm like, okay, I got it. So here's the next slide. And as you can see, you know, they always get along. They never fight. They share with each other. They say, oh, please, let me clean the toilet. No, please, really, let me clean the toilet. So, you know, these are the kind of photos that we speakers show you as mops, but I want you guys to know the truth, that that's not what daily life always looks like. And as a mom, like you, we are continually trying to build that love into the family. Now, some of you may have woken up and you may have thought, and no one look at your friend around the table, but you may have thought that you had a bad hair day. But before you think that, I'm going to show you a picture of my daughter Lucy when she was about 6 months old. And this is Lucy with her hair. So if you ever feel like you are having a bad hair day, you just think about sweet Lucy and you say, it's going to be all right. It's going to be okay. So Lucy was so funny, because wherever I took her, people would laugh because her hair just stood up like that. And in some pictures, this one is my favorite because it's like perfectly all the way around. It was in the Focus on the Family magazine in August because they had a call for crazy hair. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is perfect. Crazy hair. Finally, I'll get her published somewhere. So here she is with her crazy hair. But some days it would just like lay on one side, and then some days it'd be on like both sides. It looked like the Red Sea parted through the middle. So even when you look like that, you have bad hair days. But today we're going to talk about growing up social. And you know, raising a child, like when my son Ethan, now he's 10, when he was a baby, we faced different challenges than even you face 10 years later with a little baby in regards to screens. Because we all know that we've been to the grocery store, and instead of seeing a child, a little child, you know, sitting in their little protected seat protector inside the shopping cart, and instead of looking where the beloved Cheerios come from, and, oh, mom, there's an apple, instead, what are they doing? They're looking at a different kind of apple, and it's flat, and they're just staring at the screen. And we've done it. We've seen it, and it's different, isn't it? Raising your child in the midst of screens. It's very different than how things used to be. When my mom and dad immigrated here to America from Indonesia in 1971, my mom didn't speak English, and she came as a new mom, and you know how she learned English, by watching the television, and she watched Sesame Street, and she watched soap operas, and thankfully she didn't like get the morals of the soap operas, but her English was okay. But do you know, she spoke with this accent, and my husband always makes fun of her, like, you talk the way that you talk because of Sesame Street. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like, mom, you totally sound like the count. And you know what? We all know and we have known that television screens, they're influential. You know, they get in our minds, whether it's ideas or songs or morals or roles. All these different things are so influential. But remember, the screen of yesterday, when my parents had a television, it was like a big object, kind of like this podium. It was like something that you saved money for. It wasn't cheap. It wasn't easy. So you saved money to get this thing. And you got a TV and went right in your living room. And you always knew what your kids were watching because it was huge. And it was in your living room. And parents had to talk about, okay, you know, is it Gunsmoke Night or I Love Lucy or what are we going to watch together? And they had to decide together as a family, what are we going to do and how are we going to watch this television together? And we all knew what was being watched in the home because it was right there. Because, you know, this concern about screens is not new. You know, when the television came, it was like, oh, what's the television going to do, you know, to your child's brain? So this is not new, but what is very new is the portability of all this, that it used to be right there under your watchful eye, right there in the house. And you guys know where it is now. It's in pockets, it's in cars, it's in the restaurant. Anywhere you go, you can have access to a screen. And very soon your child will be able to have access to a screen too. So this becoming so portable, so affordable, so much so the norm, is changing the game. And we as MOPS moms, we are in prime position, because I tell you what, if I give this talk and you have a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old, you kind of think like, wow, I can't go back and do that again. But when you have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, you can say, this is how we're going to have a game plan for screens. And it's going to make a huge difference in your life and in your family. So today we're going to talk about screen time and your child. We're going to talk about screen time and how it affects your child's brain. And then we're going to talk about screen time and us. Because a lot of times, as we're looking at this book, Growing Up Social, we think, oh yeah, this is a parenting book about my kid. And then as you go through it, you realize, it's about me. It's about how I use my phone and how I use my digital life. So that's important because, you know, normal is a little bit overrated. Because normal is a child age 8 to 18 watching 7 hours of screen time a day. And that's TV, computer, phone, video games, any kind of screen media, 7 hours per day. And then if your child was born today, as some of these cute kids, you know, these cute little babies, by the time, if they follow the norm, by the time they turn 7 years old, they would have spent one full year in front of a screen, 24 hours a day. You think, my goodness, I don't want my child to have 1/7, even more, because it's 24 hours a day. I don't want my child spending that much time in front of a screen. But you know as well as I do why. It's so tempting, isn't it? That it's like, oh, you can watch that program. And when you watch that program, mommy gets a lot done while you're watching that program. Oh, you're upset right now. Okay, we cannot be upset right now. And we need to be quiet right now. So please take this phone and please do something with it. So today we're going to kind of buckle down and see what other things could we do, because if you were to just go outside of yourself and watch what you do, you'd probably be surprised and say, well, I didn't realize that we were using screens that much, because I know most of you look at that 7 hours and you think, wow, that's way too much. Let's talk about screen time and the preschooler. And you know, whenever we go to the pediatrician, we want to be obedient mothers, and they tell us, you know, more vegetables, more physical exercise, all this. I remember every year at the pediatrician, it's the same. Are your kids getting the 2 to 3 cups of vegetables or whatever? And every year I have to say, no, we're not. Well, one year I decided I was going to make a difference. I was going to act while it was like hot, you know. So I made butternut squash soup that night of the doctor's appointment, and I made it, and I said, okay, this is a vegetable, and we're going to eat this thing. You know, I thought it's creamy, it tastes good, you know, it's a very good alternative, and I put it in front of our kids, and I served it alone, because you know, if you serve it with other things, they're going to eat the bread, they're going to eat other things, and the soup will just go cold. So I served it alone. Well, Mr. Brainiac, Ethan, was about 5 at the time, and he's like, what is this? I'm like, it's dinner. I mean, he'd never seen dinner like that in his life. He said, it's dinner. Mom, you're so mean. And he just cried and cried and cried. And his little sister saw him crying. And she's like, yeah, you're mean, you know. And we told them, you can either have it now or you can have it
tomorrow for breakfast, and it's going to taste a lot better now, so go ahead and eat it now. And so we ate it very slowly, very unhappily, but he ate it. And you know, for screen time, a lot of times we sometimes have to get that kickback of, Mom, you're so mean. It's kind of like if they say, Mom, you're so mean, you know, like, yes, I'm doing a good job. I'm serving my kid butternut squash soup. You know, I'm giving my kid less screen time. Yes. Because the pediatrician's going to tell you no screens for babies to 2 years old. No screens at all for babies to 2 years old. But 90% of us are going to use screens for that age bracket. 90%, 9 out of 10 people are going to say to the pediatrician, thanks, but no thanks, we've got our screens. And the reason is, you know, you think of BU bravely, and a lot of it is being brave enough to say, I'm not going to do the norm in my family, that I want to do things differently, that I will listen to my pediatrician at this time. That takes some bravery to do that because it's a sacrifice. Let's say you've got a one-year-old, but you've also got a four-year-old, and your four-year-old's watching TV. I mean, this happened in my life because my kids are you know, different ages, but you have to honestly think, wait a minute, we've got a baby in the family, we've got a one-year-old in the family, we've really got to limit our screens or not have them because I don't want my baby exposed to all these screens. Why? I mean, what's the big deal after all? Because the advertisers are all going to prey on our fears as moms. If your baby doesn't use this app, they might not be able to read. If your baby doesn't watch this DVD, they might get to kindergarten and be like, 5 years behind. I mean, it's impossible. You know, if your child does not participate in this screen activity, you are doing something bad as a parent. That's what the advertising tells you. And so with our dollars in our hands, we say, I will buy that product because I don't want a child that's left behind. And yet research will show time and time again that a human being, remember those? A human being, whether it's a mom, a dad, caregiver, grandma, nanny, preschool worker, whoever it is, a human being will always be able to teach your baby, your toddler, your preschooler language best. The best app, the best program cannot compare to a child interacting with a real person. Because you know when you're with your baby and it's just the two of you and you're like, okay, I'm going to change your diaper now. Okay, oh, did that hurt? I'm sorry. Oh, your leg is so squishy. Oh, you know, and you're talking, right? You're talking to your baby and your baby is learning language that way. What happens when we're on screens? The screen is on, you're changing the diaper, but you're quiet because your baby or child is listening to whatever the program is, or you're changing and you might, you know, be listening to something on your phone and you're listening and you're not actively engaged with your child. So the more screens come into play in terms of language, typically the less we're talking and communicating, having that back and forth exchange with our babies and our toddlers, and that will actually delay their learning instead of propelling their learning, which is what we all think and why we try to do it. So I want to give you that encouragement that you are better than anything you could buy, that any electronic device, you do a better job at it. Now, this is kind of shocking. By the time a child is 3 years old, 1/3 of parents will put a screen in that child's room, a TV or some kind of screen by the time they're three, because they want to watch their programs and the parents don't want to watch it, so it goes in there. 1 out of 3 in America, homes in America. Now, by your faces, I'm sensing that you are not one of those three, and that is good. You guys are like, what? That's terrible. What? So that's good. That's good. So I want to encourage you, don't put screens in the room. Because just for the sheer fact of sleep, you want your child to sleep. You want to sleep. You love sleep. So, you know, when a child has a screen in the room, it always disrupts the sleep pattern. Because just like us, them and us, we need to power down our devices about an hour before we go to sleep, or else that light keeps us awake and we tend not to sleep as well. And so, you know, there's no child that's going to be able to self-regulate to say, oh, look, it's 6:45. I should turn off my program right now because in about an hour and 15 minutes, I'm going to be wanting to get some shut-eye. You know, no kid is going to do that. And so even from a sheer sleep pattern that you want your child to sleep better so they can do better in school, they can do better socially, all those things, that's a plus. So keep the screens out of the room. And that's not even touching, obviously, on content, because the content of what the screens are bringing in the home, typically it's not, all the types of things. 75% of prime time is sexual in nature. nature, and it's not the good kind of mommy daddy sexual in nature. And so these things that are being seen, the content, whether it's ads, whether it's the actual program, you want to ask a few questions about what your child is watching. And you make it as easy as ABCs. The A is the attitude. What kind of attitude do you see your child having after the program is watched or after the game is played? What's their attitude like? The B is behavior. What kind of behavior does this encourage in my child? What kind of behavior is modeled that my child wants to follow? Behavior. And the C is character. What kind of character is this modeling to my child? So you can evaluate what you're watching and the things on video games with these simple ABCs. Two other things I want to say about your child and these screens. One is that many times we have this picture, this romantic picture of like, oh, we'll watch this show together and it'll be so sweet and it'll be this bonding experience, and that's why we get this big screen TV and that's why we get this great DVD, because we're going to have this family bonding experience. And believe me, that does happen once in a while. That totally happens, and that's valid and that's wonderful. But typically when your child is watching something, that's our go signal. That is our signal like, okay, the program has started. Let's see how much we can get done in a half an hour. And let's go. And then you race around the house and you do all this stuff. And then the half an hour goes by and you are not done with your stuff. So you say, oh, just okay, fine, watch another half hour because I'm still about halfway through my list. And you keep going and going and going. And so TV, the idea of co-viewing or playing video games, and oh, I'm going to like snuggle up to my son as he plays his video game, it doesn't happen. Media time is usually alone. The kid is not with you. They're by themselves. And so for us to realize that, you know what, the screen time, it's typically not done together, because the question we want to ask in growing up social is technology bringing your family closer together, or is it driving you further apart slowly but surely? Because that's the thing. Technology is not bad. I'm not going to tell you to, you know, stop using your phone and get off email. No, you have to use it. But you've got to have limits, and you've got to be conscious about how am I going to use this in my family so that it can be a plus. So I'm a holdout. I didn't get my phone until last year, so I had a flip phone. Flip phone. So last year, I would go to all these speaking conventions at these different places, and it was so embarrassing to me because all the other women would be like taking selfies and taking pictures and texting, and I was just like, I hope nobody notices that I will never reach for my phone in public because it's this flip phone. So I come back from these conferences, and I tell my husband, honey, I need a phone. I need a phone. And he's like, well, what do you need the phone for? Which is the question you want to ask your children whenever they come of age. That's the main question. Not so-and-so has it, not I want one, but what do you need the phone for? And I'd say, well, all my friends, all my speaker friends, they all have these cameras and they take their phones and I'm so embarrassed to take out my flip phone. He's like, that's it? Yeah, that's basically it. And he's like, no, we are not getting a phone. We are not getting a new expense so you can feel like your friends and you can take selfies with your phone. We're not doing that. And so for a long time, I didn't do that. And then last year, you know, we realized, okay, if I was able to take your credit card for the books, which I'll be able to do today, that was a valid reason to get a phone. So I got my phone last year. I know, I got a big girl reason to get a phone. So I got my phone last year, and Lucy, Miss Big Hair, you know, she sees it and she's like, whoa, because she knows what it can do, right? She's seen her friends use it and everything. So little Lucy, she comes towards it, you know, and she is on fire. And she looks at it, and right at that moment, it just flashes before me like, okay, do I want to every 10 minutes be like, no, Lucy, that's mommy's phone. Give it back. I need it. Give it back. What are you doing with it? Where is it? I just thought like, do I want to do all that? I thought, no, I don't want to do that. So right as she got close to it, I was like, no, this is a no touch. This is mommy's phone, and you are not allowed to touch it. The only time you can touch mommy's phone is when we're in an airplane. And she thought about it for a second, and then she's like, well, we saw grandma and grandpa last month. And I was like, well, I didn't have my phone then. So Lucy is very much looking forward to an airplane ride. But do you know that if you will set the limit of no, this is a no touch, that your kids will abide by it? Because you know as well as I do that there's like a gazillion babies, toddlers, preschoolers who are going around America holding this phone. And the thing is, look at it. It's several hundred dollars, right? We wouldn't give like a high ticket item. Normally we wouldn't say, oh, here to a one-year-old, take this and take good care of it. Good luck. You know, they can drop it. They can lose it. They can break it. They could delete something, they could rearrange something, they could do all sorts of things to it that you don't realize because they're on it while you're doing something else, you're otherwise occupied. So one, I want to encourage you guys to rethink giving your phones to your toddlers and your preschoolers. A, simply because of value, why give such a high ticket item to a young child and expect that they're going to be able to take care of it, know where it is, take care of it, not delete anything. And then second, just so that you know what? You can set those limits and your kids can do it. Because I know some of you are like, oh, that would not work with my family. My child would throw a fit if I took their phone away. Because you know that while we're waiting for places, whatever, it's like, oh, here, take the phone. But do you know that if you will set that limit, and there's going to be a lot of pushback at the beginning, but if you're strong in it and you stay in it, you will get your phone back. Because how many times have you been like, give mommy back her phone? And you think about it, this is mommy's phone. This is not like 3-year-old's phone. It's your phone. So don't be afraid. Take your phone back. It's yours. There's a quiz at the end of the book, Growing Up Social, that you can take to see if you and your kids are getting too much screen time. And I'm going to give you just a few questions to get you thinking about it. You answer either never true or always true. Your child is upset when you ask him to stop his screen activity to come to dinner or another activity. Your child asks to play a video game or other screen-related activity after you've said no. Your child does not give frequent eye contact to others in the home. Your child would rather play video games than go outside to play with friends. So those are a few things just to kind of get you started to think about, you know, are screens taking too much of a hold in my family? And you know, it's getting younger and younger, isn't it? It used to be perhaps more of an elementary school issue, and now it's something that in the preschool years becomes very much an issue for us as well. Well, let's talk about screen time in the brain. What's really going up? You know, my husband will always tease like, nobody's home, like when they're watching TV. What's really happening? And you know, we talked a little bit about the fears that we have of, oh, if my child isn't on screens, they will be left behind in the technological age. I mean, how many times have you heard 21st century learning? And they've got to be on screens, and technology is the future, and you don't want your child to be left behind. And of course you don't want your child to be left behind. But do you know that they did this study, and they took 12 people that never use the internet, and then they took another 12 people that always use the internet, and they had them perform Google searches, and they scanned their brains while they were doing it. And they found that the two groups looked very different. Their brain activity looked very different. The ones that were experts, they showed a lot of firing in the part of the brain that makes quick decisions. So it would be evaluating links, you know, should I look at that? Oh, look, those shoes are on sale. I better email that back. Oh, that's an interesting headline. So that it's always, you're always making these quick decisions. And those were the parts of the brain that were being used while they were performing Google searches. They had the two groups read a print book and their brains scanned exactly the same. They took the novices and they told them, okay, go on the internet 1 hour a day. And they did that for 5 days. So 1 hour a day for 5 days in a row, they went on Google and they looked for things and they got acquainted with the internet. Well, after only 5 hours, they scanned the two groups again, and only after 5 hours, their brains already looked like the experienced users. So it tells us that it does change your brain activity. It does change what your brain is doing because you're strengthening. It'd just be like if you're working out a bicep muscle and then all of a sudden you see your bicep come out, that it's the same thing in the brain. When you're doing those internet searches, you're strengthening that part of your brain that's for quick decision making, visual acuity. You see things in your periphery and, you know, those kinds of things. So after a short amount of time, they'd already rewired their brains. It also tells me that your child can rewire their brain towards technology very, very quickly. My son, Ethan, he's in fifth grade. He goes to public school, and he doesn't play video games. He's never played video games. He doesn't play video games. He's not terribly interested in playing video games. So that's him. He's different. He's weird. I know. He's very weird. So, but if I took my weird son and I gave him a video game for 5 hours, do you think he'd be able to play it and enjoy it? Yeah. He'd be able to play it and enjoy it. He wouldn't be left behind. friend. He could do it. But could I take a child, same age as my son, age 10, who's played video games all his life, and could I take that child in 5 hours and say, here's a 200-page book, I'd like you to read it for these 5 hours, and then I'd like you to tell me what it is, what it's about, can you understand, et cetera. That child, can they learn that skill? Can their brain learn that skill in the 5 hours? Not really. And that's not to mention emotional skills and dealing with people and empathy and all those things that have to be learned over time. So remember, the computer use challenges a part of the brain, but it's a part of the brain that can be very easily used and learned. But there are other things. We talk in the book about A-plus skills, not just the school skills, but emotional skills that your child needs to succeed. Their attention. Can your child pay attention? Appreciation. Do you have a grateful child who can say thank you? Or is it like, I wanted the blue one? You know, are they appreciative? Anger management. Can they manage their anger? Apology. Do they know how to apologize? And affection. Do they know how to give and receive love? And those types of things in the brain have to be learned over time. There's not a 5-hour crash course that can teach that in your child's life. But technologically, it's very easy for a child to catch up. So keep it in mind that you want to raise an adult who's responsible, who deals well emotionally with others, and screens are not your ally in that endeavor. They did the study for college students, and they saw that college students today are 40% less empathetic than college students of 20 years ago. So it means that a college student of yesteryear might have tripped, and three of us might have said, oh, are you okay? Are you all right? Okay. And then today, that college student trips, and nobody notices because everybody's looking down at their screens, right? So there's not this empathy. Everything's about me and my world, and there's not this empathy about, oh, what's going on around me? No one's noticing what's going around them. Also, when you text, you can't see that, wow, my text just made that person cry. You know, you don't know that. Whereas in real life, face-to-face, if you say something rude or mean, you know, wow, I overstepped my line. But over text, which is what teens do, you know, they don't see what is happening. So the empathy is being lost. Kids are also not able to read body language because they're on screen so much. And so, of course, they know, oh, mom's real happy. Oh, mom's real mad. But all the little nuances, she's confused, she's irritated, she's disoriented, she's lost, she's about to lose it, you know, whatever. All these different nuances of the face, they're losing because the kids aren't spending all this one-on-one time looking at people. What are they looking at? They're looking at screens. So we have to be very careful about that. Dr. Gary Small, a researcher, says the pathways for human interaction and communication weaken as customary one-on-one skills atrophy. Ask any of the mentor moms in here. The child of yesteryear was able to shake your hand, look you in the eye, and say, nice to meet you, Mr. Jones. It was pretty simple. A child today, that you don't have to prompt or anything, and the child looks at you, oh, what's your name? Oh, Miss Arlene, nice to meet you. My name is such and such, and shakes my hand, I'd be like, you are an extraordinary child. So we're losing those customary one-on-one people skills, and guess what? The good news is we can practice these things at home so that when our kids go out, they can have those strong people skills. The other thing I want to say about the brain is that the brain has this huge spurt with these sweet babies at birth. They have all these billions and billions of brain cells, and that's why your pediatrician doesn't want you to put your baby on screens, because then all the formations are all about the screens and just this two-dimensional thing. They want you to have the baby to have brain connections to people. Connections to you, not connections to a screen or to a TV, and they want to see things in the real world. So that's a real time where the brain needs that growth and that screens really should be limited. Believe it or not, there's a second time that we all can look forward to as MOPS moms around puberty, around age 10, 11, 12, where kids, believe it or not, get a second burst of brain activity. And Dr. Jake Yead at the Institute of Mental Health talks about this use it or lose it principle, that basically what that 10, 11, 12-year-old is doing during that time is forming what brain cells they'll have, healthy brain cells they'll have as an adult. So if your child, according to Dr. Gied, is watching MTV and he's laying on the couch, then those are the brain cells that will be geared for adulthood. And we see that, don't we, in older kids.
But if your child's doing academics, sports, music, being with people during that 10, 11, 12, those years, those are the brain cells that are hardwired. So we as moms, it's time for us not to sit passively by and be like, well, you know, everybody does it. Everybody's watching screens. I know it's not the best, but it's the age we live in. You have a direct input on what kind of brain your child is going to have as an adult. You have the input of saying, what kind of things do I want to put into that brain? And then, of course, there's that possibility of addiction, because we know it as moms that we've seen it. There was a senior in high school. His name is Michael. And like all of us, can you imagine our baby being a senior in high school? It just kind of takes your breath away. And it was finally that day, and they had a huge party for friends and family, and Michael was downstairs. But after a few minutes, Michael got disinterested. He went upstairs to his room and started playing video games. 10 minutes. His mom went upstairs, like, come back downstairs. Everybody's here for you. Everybody's here for your party. Michael's like, well, it's my party, and I want to play video games, so I'm going to play games. That's what I want to do. And that's what he did. And so the party wound down really fast. After a few minutes, the guest of honor is not here. Everybody left. And you know, it's an extreme story. It's a sad story. But can't you see it as moms? That the more our kids are involved in screens, the more there's that possibility for that addiction of I need it. I want it. I want my spare time to be filled with it. I know a dear family, Christian family, good mom, good dad, good kids. They went on a camping trip. Two high schoolers, one upper elementary school student went on a camping trip. They had to come back early. Because why? Because their kids were like, there's no Wi-Fi here, I can't text anybody here, we need to get home, we need to get home, we need to get home. And they bickered about it so much that they were like, this is no vacation. And they came home. And so we don't want our kids to be so dependent on technology that they need it. They did the study of 1,000 students, and they took away, in 10 different countries, and they took away their phones for one day. And several of them came back, and they were like, please give me my phone back, because I need it. And they said they felt like they were on crack, that they needed it so bad, and that it was like their source of comfort and consolation and connection. So believe it or not, it all starts now, when they're babies, when they're toddlers, when they're preschoolers. And if you will make screens a part of their life but not a main part of their life, they'll be able to handle this with their brain much better. There's some countries that are further down the road, Korea, Taiwan, China, that have a lot of screen addiction among their kids. In Korea, they have all-night gaming centers that people can go to, and they stay all night long, and they game, and they stay there, and it's terrible. So that's that. But they have all these centers now because they have internet use disorder is what they call it. And it's defined as 38 hours a week or more of playing. So that besides your job being on the computer 38 hours or more, you need to play. There's a loss of interest in other things. There's a higher tolerance. So what used to give you a thrill doesn't give you a thrill anymore. So you've got to do it more. You've got to do it more aggressively. And you can see where it goes. And you see it in your own children, that the little show that they used to love, now it's not enough, and they want to watch two shows. Or the little game that they used to love is boring to them now, and they want to get the next game. And so the brain is being taught in screens that it's all about you and getting that next hit of dopamine, that next hit of pleasure. You know, in their brains, remember when we used to go to school, and we'd have to go to the library and look up a book and pull it out and alphabetize and all this kind of stuff, get a little card and look at the book. What do they do now if they want to write about Abraham Lincoln? They just have to type in L-I-N, and then it like all comes out. So everything's coming very easily to them, but it's not helping their brains. Screen time's instant, it's immediate, it's full of rewards, and is life like that? Are you going to walk into work? Is your child going to walk into work one day, and everybody's going to go, you're here, hooray, you're here. You know, life does not work this way. It's like, if you stay till 10 o'clock, you'll get a prize. You know, this is not how real life works. So screen time is teaching your child this alternate universe that doesn't exist in the real world. And when it's time for grit, and when it's time to study hard, and when it's time to work that relationship out with a spouse, if their brains are used to, oh, it's got to be instant, then they're going to give up. So even that, I think, is huge. Giving your child the ability to be bored, to have self-control, to wait, to be patient, those things are so important for their brain. All right, let's talk about screen time and you, because there's this wonderful quote by the late Howard Hendricks that says, you cannot impart what you do not possess. So we as moms, we want to give our child, oh, have control.
only one program, turn it off and don't whine. You know, we want them to have this kind of control, but we have to what? Possess the control ourselves first to be able to pass it on. So I get this. You know, I'm writing this book with Dr. Chapman. I've got three kids growing up social, and I'm on my computer a lot. And I'm thinking, how funny that mommy's on the computer while I'm writing about growing up social and being with these kids. It happened to me also when I was writing 31 Days to a Happy Husband, and my husband would always come by me behind me at the computer, be like, when do my 31 days start? And I'd be like, when the book is over, buddy, that's when it starts, you know. So here we are, growing up social, mommy's on the computer a lot, and I'm really thinking this through, like, wow, I'm on the computer a lot. But, you know, we moms, we do have things to do, so I don't want us to feel guilty about the things, many of us work from home, about the things we need to do, but it's setting limits, isn't it? Setting limits and making small habits that are really good. So I'm going to teach you guys a small habit that won't take you any extra time and that will show your kids and your husband that you love them. And it's simply this. It is the swivel. It is a swivel, ladies. So it used to be that I would be on the computer and my husband or my child would yell a question or whatever, da 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 da, and I'd say, it's in the refrigerator, da 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 da, whatever. You know, no eye contact, nothing. But now, when they approach me, instead of them talking, you know, to my profile, instead, I just swivel my chair. And I make a point of looking them in the eye and saying, what do you need? And then they'll say, I can't find my homework. And then I'll say, you know, blah, 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 whatever. But the interaction has taken the same amount of time, because I'm, you know, it could be like this, but now I'm looking at them, and what it shows your child or your spouse is, hey, you are actually more important to me than the screen. You are more important to me than staring at this email. You are more important to me than my friends on Facebook. And so simply by having eye contact with your kids, when you're holding a device, when you're interacting with a screen, when someone you love enters, turn away from your screen, who does not love you back, and look at your child, look at your husband, and make that a really small habit. It really works well. Another thing is having a time where you end. Because isn't it true, you could always be on. You could always get ahead. There's always one more email to send off. There's always one more glance at social media. There's always one more thing you could do. So it's never going to end. So set a time in your mind. For us, it's when the kids go to bed, unless we're like under a really strict deadline. When the kids go to bed, we turn everything off. And what happens then is you know that that time is time for my husband and I. We give massages. We have mommy-daddy time, which we call it, mommy-daddy time. You guys know what that is. And, you know, we talk, and that's our time together. So have a time in your day where you power down and that you spend time with your family uninterrupted. Meal time is a wonderful time to make this. Don't put the TV on in the background while you're having meal time. Study after study shows that kids who have regular meal time with their family don't get as screwed up as kids who don't, okay? So have meal time with your family and talk to them one-on-one. No screens. And this little guy, put this away during mealtime so that you're not the person always on their phone, always texting when you're supposed to be talking to your family. There's an author named William Powell, and he wrote this book called Hamlet's Blackberry, and it's about the changing technology through the ages. He's an author. His wife's an author. They had a teenage son. And they realized that even though they loved each other very much, they were growing separate. They'd get home after work. Everyone would get on their own computer to their own device, do their thing. They'd go to sleep, and the same thing would repeat day after day after day. You could see it, right? So they were finding that here we are, but we're not close anymore. So they decided to do something very different, and they made a digital Sabbath. And for them, it meant that they unplugged the modem on Friday night when they went to bed, and they told all their friends and coworkers about this, and they didn't plug back in until Monday morning. So they were off the grid for the weekend. So the first, you know, you think, oh, that's, wow, good for them, you know, but they hated it. They hated it for weeks and weeks and weeks. The first week they did it, they all drifted to their devices, to their computers, and there was nothing there. It was like, what do we do now? And they all stared at each other, and they decided it was the most terrible idea they ever had. They didn't like it at all. It took weeks and weeks and weeks. And can you believe that it took 4 to 5 months of doing this before they could say, we like this? So don't give up. As you make changes and you think this isn't working, don't give up. Keep doing it. And make changes that work for your family. If you're watching 8 hours a day and you realize, wow, that is way too much. I didn't realize we were watching so much. We're going to 1 hour. That might not work so well. But go to 7. Say, hey, we're going to go to 7 hours. And pat yourself on the back when you get to 7. And then the next week and the next week get to 6. So you want small, incremental changes that work in your family. So for them, they finally got to the point where they looked forward to it, right? I can't wait till Saturday because then we'll be able to rest and relax. Here's what he said about it. We peeled our mind away from the screens where they'd been stuck. We were really there with one another and nobody else, and we could all feel it. There was an atmospheric change in our minds, a shift to a slower, less restless, more relaxed way of thinking. Wouldn't that be nice, Mops Mom? A slower, less restless, more relaxed way of thinking. We could just be in one place doing one particular thing and enjoy it. The crowded part of our life we could put at a distance. It was a reminder it was ours to put at a distance. This is supposed to be for our convenience, right? To serve us. And yet we've kind of made it like, oh, you rang? You know, let me do this. We're serving it. And you think about the Ten Commandments, you shall have no graven idols. And we always think like, well, I don't have one of those tiki wooden idols in my home. You know, I got that one taken care of. And yet an idol's anything we put before God. And so many times, instead of saying, Lord, you know, what do you have for me today? We're saying, okay, like, what's going on today? And we're looking at this instead. And so realize that technology can take that place of that sweet relationship you have with the Lord. And it affects our relationship with the Lord. Because all of a sudden we're like, God, I prayed that 3 minutes ago and you didn't answer it. So what's going on? Because we're used to instant answers. And you know, it says in the Psalm, be still and know that I am God. And yet it's hard to be still because what do? Every moment that's spare, we're here. And we have no stillness anymore. So the challenge is put this down, be more still, put things in your life that put technology in its place. One person wrote in and said they put this sign on the door. We're putting a bin at our front door with a sign that says, unless you're expecting a call from God, the Pope, or the President, please deposit your device here so we can make the most of our time together. In a few minutes, I'm going to show this video of what life could look like with screens or without screens. And as we show it, I want you guys to be thinking and praying about your own family and what God would have you to say about your technology. The kids in this thing is, they're my kids because they're cheap labor. Everyone who's not Asian are their friends. And then my husband, you'll see my husband on here, but take a look at Growing Up Social.